Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A fireball engulfs a slum in Kenya. An ex-clown is suspected of sex abuse in Beaverton, and a contractor is burned by tar in Tualatin.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, September 13th, 2011. A record number of bicycles were stolen in Portland over the past year. In August 2009, police bureau records show 175 bike thefts in the Portland area.
Well done. Or no, bad. No. Bad. Sorry. Wrong.
Compared to 217 in August of 2010, and in this year, 285. That included a theft just last weekend at Lakeside Bicycles in Lake Oswego, where a customer took a bike for a spin and never returned with it. That bike was worth $5,000. The thief was caught on a surveillance camera. The man did give his driver's license to the staff before going on a test ride, but it turns out that it was fake. Gordon Haber with Lakeside Bicycle said, about after a half an hour, it became apparent he wasn't coming back. So we called the police.
Okay.
Right. Police said some bicycles are actually being stolen right off the top of people's cars in the Portland area.
Do we get a prize of some kind for being number one?
Well, I'm sure we're not number one, but it's just that it's an important news story to know that incrementally, year by year, more bicycles are being stolen.
Oh, it's only number one for us, not for the whole...
Right, right.
So it's a personal record.
Yes.
Okay, that's not as impressive.
No, no. But, you know, really, you're only in competition with yourself.
Well, that's true. It's... Thank you, Tony Robbins. Hello, you're listening to Legion of News. This is Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, September 13th. 2011, coming up later on this hour. You got your entertainment news, also science on the march, and so forth. Don't forget, this program is also available later on the day via iTunes or say direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. And the next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com and so forth. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A leaking oil pipeline, an overcrowded slum, a lit cigarette were the combustible ingredients in a sadly predictable tragedy that killed at least 120 people in Nairobi, Kenya, with a count of charred bodies still rising today. Authorities are piecing together just what happened, but it seems that dozens of villagers were racing to scoop up free oil when someone discarded a cigarette into the sewage dike where it was flowing steadily. According to the New York Times, there was no time to escape. The fuel exploded, sending a giant fireball shooting up over the slum, engulfing scores of people and scattering bodies that were left in various poses of anguish, burned to the bone.
This is really one of those times where you'd say, well, they ruined the whole neighborhood too, but
not
slum
so much,
in
no.
Kenya.
Kalonzo Musyoka, Kenya's vice president, using the Kiswahili words reserved for condolences, said, all I can say is pole sana, these people died like goats.
Fire has done tens of dollars of damage to a whole village.
I have a feeling that these people died like goats may be something that is much more meaningful in his native language than in English.
If he does, especially if he's doing it with that, you know, kind of language, it...
Video from Kenya's Daily Nation showed the fire engulfed houses, trapping women, children, and men. I mean, it's not a funny story, but aside from the fact that anytime something bursts into a giant fireball, it's just sort of, there's some inherent humor there. Why the pipeline burst open is unclear, although residents said leaks are common. Some accounts suggest villagers had been trying to siphon fuel from it. Once it was opened, there's general agreement that people came from all around to try and gather it. The neighborhood is desperately poor. Many of its residents are squatters living right next to the pipeline in defiance of eviction notices. And then apparently, yes, during all of this, someone decided to light a cigarette.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not mocking the loss of life. I'm just saying that on stories like this, one must either laugh or one must cry. And crying is simply not an option.
No, so, there's no crying in podcasting.
Try to seek the lighter side, such as goat-like acts of heroism.
Right.
Okay. Hello and hi. Next hour of the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we got a job watch coming up, corpse watch coming up, and we'll recap Sunday's season finale of True Blood that is coming up in the next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Let's see, what else will we do? We'll also, well, we'll talk more about this later, so we have to stop ourselves. I'm going to mention this now, but then you and I, we have to collectively not talk about this. So I'll just say that by amazing coincidence, I was on my way to work this morning, and I was listening to the same thing, more or less, that you were. A better version of it, anyway. but next hour, we'll play a little bit of that the new Alice Cooper album, which came out today. So, and then we'll talk about what Don was listening to when I walked into the studio.
Which was not that
You were
good.
Listening to one of the worst songs ever recorded when I walked into the studio today.
It's Pandora's fault. It's not mine.
I'll play the whole thing, too, and then we can analyze it line by line. It really is one of the worst pieces of music ever recorded. So, but I've got it with me. That's what a retard I am. I just carry it around with me. So we'll get to that. That's all at rickemersonshow.com. Yeah.
GOP presidential hopefuls targeted frontrunner Rick Perry at Monday night's debate in Tampa. One area where they hit him hard was an executive order Perry signed as governor of Texas to vaccinate all young girls in his state against cervical cancer. Michelle Bachmann lashed out and said Perry did so to gain campaign contributions.
Seriously, have you seen the young girls in Texas, though? I mean, come on, for our...
Perry fought back. Bachmann and Rick Santorum did as well.
What cut is this?
Debate one.
Debate one. Let's see, debate one.
You're saying that I can be bought for $5,000. I'm offended.
I'm offended for all the little girls and the parents that didn't have a choice. That's what I'm offended for.
Awesome.
There is no government purpose served. This is big government run amok. It is bad policy, and it should not have been done.
I hope I would just, you know, I just wanted to erupt into just not that I wish for any sort of harm to come to any elected official. I wish them all a long life and the best of health. I'm just saying, in a totally non-violent, non-harmful fashion, I just want their just fisticuffs to erupt on stage. And just, like, what if they really did just take shots at him? Like, literally, like Ron Paul held him down, and Michelle Bachmann just kicked him in the junk over and over again.
I mean, seriously, that's what they choose? Pro-cancer?
Yeah.
They decide that they're going to fight him back by being in favor of women getting cancer?
He did have a pretty good... He just... He walked the line pretty well on it, though, because they tried to nail him on the fact that... Because it has to do with, you know... Because it has to do with, you know, that, like, down there.
Yeah, that down there part.
And so it's naughty. But he said... He said something about the... I think he split the difference by saying, I regret the fact that I did it via an executive order, but sometimes you've just got to take a stand against cancer, which is great because it's sort of impossible to rebut that. I mean, I don't think anybody really disagrees with the latter half of that statement.
Well, essentially, since Michelle Bachmann is saying, you know, she's concerned for all those women and girls who weren't given the choice to pick possible cancer.
Right.
Of course, none of this, of course, I don't think any of this is quite as awesome. And unfortunately, I don't have the audio for it here of Ron Paul when he basically said that people without insurance, let them die, was what he said.
Okay.
So frontrunners Rick Perry and Mitt Romney squared off on a number of subjects, including their disagreement over illegal immigration.
If you want to live in the state of Texas and you want to pursue citizenship, that we're going to allow you the opportunity to be contributing members in the state of Texas.
With regards to illegal immigration, of course we build a fence. And of course we do not give in-state tuition credits to people who've come here illegally.
Well, except they're not giving tuition credits to people who've come here illegally. They're giving tuition credits to the children of people who have come here illegally. The children, of course, having been born here by dint of, what's that thing?
Which makes them citizens,
that's right.
Doesn't it?
Yes,
actual citizens of this country.
Born here,
but
citizens.
But they're brown, Rick. They're brown.
I'm sorry.
We don't, you know. Okay, actually, I do, if you want to pop this up, I do actually have the sound about Ron Paul, which is just, here we go. This is
okay, and I'll stop it.
Thank you, Governor. Before I get to Michelle Bachmann, I want to just, you're a physician, Ron Paul, so you're a doctor. You know something about this subject. Let me ask you this hypothetical question. A healthy 30-year-old young man has a good job, makes a good living, but decides, you know what, I'm not going to spend $200 or $300 a month for health insurance because I'm healthy, I don't need it. But, you know, something terrible happens, all of a sudden he needs it. Who's going to pay for if he goes into a coma, for example?
Who pays
for that?
In a society that you accept welfareism and socialism, he expects the government to take care of him.
What do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before.
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
But, Congressman, are you saying the society should just let him die?
No. I practiced medicine before we had Medicaid in
That's
the early 1960s when I got out of medical school. I practiced at Santa Rosa Hospital in San Antonio, and the churches took care of him. We never turned anybody away from the hospital. And we've given up on this whole concept that we might take care of ourselves and assume responsibility for ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, our churches would do it. This whole idea, that's the reason the cost is so high. The cost is so high, we cause a dump on the government, becomes a bureaucracy, it becomes special interest, it kowtows to the insurance companies and the drug companies. Then on top of that, you have the inflation. The inflation devalues the dollar. We have lack of competition. There's no competition in medicine. Everybody's protected by licensing. We should actually legalize alternative health care, allow people to practice what they want.
Congressman, go ahead and weigh in on this hypothetical.
So if you get really sick and you don't have insurance, you should go to your church.
So Jesus will be the cure all for everything.
Of course, if you're an atheist and you get really sick and you're just screwed.
I know that this rankles certain people, but I have to point this out. That it's funny how on a question about health care, he even found a way to go back to a de facto mention of the gold standard by bringing up inflation.
Yeah.
It's like he lost a bet or something, and he has to work inflation or gold into every response to every. What about waffles versus pancakes? Well, let me tell you the thing about that vis-a-vis gold.
My God, is there if there was any doubt at all that these Tea Party knuckleheads are just borderline evil. It's like, well, what? Wolf Blitzer says, what? Should you just let them die?
Yeah! Well, somebody says, did they have this debate at San Quentin?
Oh, God.
It's great to be alive.
Yes. It's going to be a great presidential election.
Okay, thankfully, I don't have a terminal illness, to the best of my knowledge, so I'll be around to see it.
Hold on.
Somebody, let me pot you down while you.
Thank you.
Says, you guys are confusing this. Ron Paul didn't say that if you get sick, then F you. I'd like to think that he did, though. Somebody should just say that. They should just, you know, get bent. He's saying if you can pay for your own health insurance, but if you refuse to, it seems like the government needs to have it one way or the other. They need to either decide that no one is going to be covered against catastrophic illness or everybody is going to be covered against catastrophic illness. I mean, we're getting into a whole thing here that's probably going to irritate and tire everyone.
Also, let's define choose. There's also this belief system that you have basing an option. You are either so poor that you can get public assistance, which, by the way, they want to take away anyway, or you're, say, a working man or whatever, and you can afford to get insurance. My husband, for example, just got laid off from his job. It's costing us $300 a month to keep him on COBRA. I do not have insurance now because he's getting unemployment And he's on unemployment, and it costs $300 for him to maintain his health insurance.
Well, are there any two syllables that irritate people more than Cobra?
I know.
And you get fired. We'll have a meeting about Cobra benefits in the next room. Why would they, I mean, even if the acronym was actually CRBA or whatever, why would you name your health benefits post-firing after something that was dangerous and impossible to control?
But the whole process, though, is that, okay, you've lost your job here. We're going to give you you're going to get considerably less money coming in than you had before. Oh, yeah, and now you're going to spend, like, out the ass to maintain health insurance so that you don't end up dead in a ditch somewhere. It's, you know, and so it's like, I guess, Ron Paul, I guess Patrick could choose not to pay for it, what with his kidney problems and all.
Well, private industry will take care of it, Don.
But, or I guess we could go to church.
Yeah.
And the church folk would make sure it's all okay.
And just before we move on to whatever else, I will say, I've got all this email. Inexplicably, everybody's really interested in the debate for some reason. But so there's several people have commented on the cervical cancer drug or whatever, and disputing the efficacy of the drug. But to me, that's like a side issue because it has nothing to do with whether or not it's effective. That's not Michelle Bachmann's beef about it.
No.
Michelle Bachmann's beef is that it's A, something she can rail at Rick Perry about, and B, that it has to do with, you know, your dirty area. And I mean, because it was some sort of some sort of anti-cancer vaccine, however effective or not it is, that's not an issue here because that's not what she's upset about. I think if it was a thing that went into your elbow instead into, you know, your business down there, I think she would probably be significantly less upset with it. But I think the idea that the efficacy of it is debatable is probably not really at issue here.
But the thing is, you know, I don't know what the complaint is about the efficacy. I mean,
well, because
it has been shown that if you actually give it to young women, you know, when they are, in their young teens or whatever, it does offer protection against a lot of the HPV stuff, including an HPV is a major factor in cervical cancer.
Apparently, there are studies that indicate that the drug itself is not entirely safe. And so, but again, all of that, I'm not saying that's unimportant, but I'm saying it's unimportant for the purposes of this discussion because you didn't hear anybody in that discussion talking about whether or not it was safe. You didn't hear anybody in the debate mentioning whether or not it was dangerous or whether or not it was effective. Their only thing was using it as a cudgel against Rick Perry and the fact that they could somehow tie it into promoting sex with 12-year-olds. I mean, that was just, that was sort of a cherry on top, no pun intended, that they were able to, it just became a millstone that they could hang on the guy. My only observation, by the way, about the issue of healthcare would be that, I mean, maybe everybody else's constitution differs from mine, but if you read my copy of the U.S. Constitution, there is a thing called the preamble in which it states that the government is there to provide for the common defense. And if you consider the fact that every terrorist attack against Americans in the history of our nation has not killed the number of people that cancer kills in 1 year, it seems to me like providing for the common defense includes, you know, taking care of people who get cancer. That would just be the way that I string the words together in the document that runs our country. But, you know, what do I know? Hi there. You're listening to... Wait, hold on. We just got to do this for just 1 second. We'll just do a little bit of a... All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Coming up later on this hour, we haven't even gotten to the science portion.
No, I know.
We're already in vaccine and your genitals, and you know we haven't even gotten to science. It's just this itself is a preamble. It's an overture.
Can we really talk about genitals enough, though?
No, we can't. Et cetera, et cetera. Later on, entertainment news and so forth, and penis. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, in lighter news, a contractor working on an apartment complex parking lot was burned yesterday when a pot of tar fell on him. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue officials say the man was walking near a trailer which was carrying the tar when a speed bump knocked the tar onto him.
Wow.
Neighbor Bill Backman said, "Everybody was in shock. When we went over to the victim, he has tar on him. What are you supposed to do? That's not something we're trained in." Neighbors say they brought the man 2 buckets of water and ice to help cool the burns on his hands and arms. Another neighbor said he was in so much pain. I mean, it just got to my heart that he was moving around with so much pain.
I didn't say tarnation, by the way, for the record. No.
A Life Flight helicopter took the man from the scene to Legacy Burn Center. This happened at Southwest 65th Avenue in Tualatin. Firefighters say his burns over 10% of his body and the injuries are considered life-threatening. Tuesday, that would be today, is a big day for something known as the milk truck. See, this is happy news, but it doesn't have dogs, so it wouldn't do any good to have, like, dog barking now. Pittsburgh City Councilman Patrick Dowd will present the creator of the mobile breastfeeding station with a proclamation declaring it the Milk Truck Day in the city.
Okay.
Jim Miller, an artist and instructor at CMU, this is in Pittsburgh, said the truck will be ready in time for an exhibit at the Andy Warhol Museum, which begins this Saturday. The idea behind the truck is that nursing mothers who are made to feel uncomfortable or embarrassed about breastfeeding at certain establishments can call the milk truck for support. The truck will drive over, set up in place. It looks like an ice cream truck, but it has a giant breast on the roof.
Where is this happening?
In Pittsburgh.
Okay.
It's meant to shame businesses that shame women for breastfeeding.
Are there businesses that shame women for breastfeeding?
Apparently, here's the thing I've learned from this discussion with the rabid boob Nazis. If you even so much as suggest that perhaps it is not cool for a woman to rip out her boob, just whip it out and jam it into the mouth of her squalling infant while people are trying to eat nearby, you are anti-woman and you hate babies and you are infringing on something that is natural and beautiful.
Well, look, I hate babies and women as much as the next guy. This is another one of those things where you and I are, it's like in some bizarro world. There's no downside to me there. A, there's a boob. B, the baby quits crying. I don't see the disadvantage.
I don't want to watch some thing just suckling at strange woman while I'm trying to eat my omelet.
I'm for whatever stops the child from shrieking. If the boob is better and she can carry it with her everywhere, that's like a cork that she can carry with her all the time.
And that's why. And here's my thing. If they have many women, and I have known such women, I have been in public with such women, they carry like a very light little, say, cloth. And they kind of put it over the baby's head, and then the baby's under there. And you kind of look over and you go, oh, she's breastfeeding a baby. But you don't have to actually watch the with the baby just latched onto some strange woman's teat. You know, it's just, and so, you know, and then, but there are these women who go, oh, I am not covering up my baby's head. There is nothing to be ashamed of.
Your nursing sounds like a FARC meme.
If you can't deal with it, then you just have a problem. You hate women. And it's like, you know, no, I just don't, it's icky. I don't want to see it.
Yeah, now see, I'm.
And I am totally in favor of any dining establishment or business who goes, hey, ladies, seriously, we have a restroom in the back. We have here's a lovely cloth napkin. You could put over the kid.
I'm
over
pro
your boob.
I got to say, I'm pro boob. I'm pro the exposure of boob. And again,
even lactating boobs that someone's spawn are feeding
but,
off.
But
of?
See, again, it's silencing a child. It's multitasking. The boob is not just beautiful, Don. It's functional. It silences children. What more do you want from it to cure cancer? I mean, honestly.
I believe Michelle Bachmann would support my right to hate on boobs. I don't know. So Miller says she's getting calls from businesses and events that are now supportive of nursing mothers who want the truck to come and park in front so they can go, hooray, boobs. Some of the calls have been from Pittsburgh. She's also gotten requests from Arizona and even Scotland. So I said part of the goal is to start a conversation about a woman's right to nurse. And it worked. We just discussed it.
There
Look
you go.
At that. We're talking. They hope to respond to women in need of support in a 50-mile radius of Pittsburgh. They're also raising money to pay for gas in the truck. And you can find out more about this, by the way, at www.themilktruck.org.
Here's my thing about, and I'll just make this one observation, then we'll move on. Because otherwise it's just, I can already tell, it's like an honorary Thursday. It's going to be one of those days where we just get sidetracked by everything. My whole thing with, it's not just men. There's a lot of women like this, too. The guys who just, it's like they immediately find, like, the nursing boob somehow unattractive. Like, the boob, it loses all appeal if it's being functional as opposed to just aesthetic.
Yeah.
My thing with that is, that's like those guys who won't have sex with some chick if she's on her period. Seriously,
I don't see that.
What do you care? I mean,
I don't. It's not the boob that I find unappealing. It is the creature that is latched onto it, sucking on it, in my eyesight.
Okay, but see, well, that's okay. But you don't want a thing over the boob. You want a thing over the baby.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically. Tarp over the baby, boob
That's
out
what
there.
I said.
Everyone. See, what you're talking about, but you didn't say, like, over the baby itself.
Well, you kind of put it over the baby's head, and so that you don't have to watch the whole mouth latched on suckling process. But yeah, the whole rest of the boob and everything can be totally naked, as far as I care.
Yeah, so we're totally on the same page then.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
They and I don't have a problem with it. I know that breastfeeding is great and it's awesome. I have been with friends in their home when they have been breastfeeding their baby, and I have witnessed it, and I
don't want your sister to
and
marry
I
one,
don't
though.
Have a problem with it.
No,
I just strangers. I don't want to see strangers' bodily functions. Is basically it. Maybe I'm a little squeamish about that. I don't want to see people poop in public, and I don't want to see strangers lactating in front of me, particularly in restaurants.
Someone says, "Would it bother you if you were a kitten?" Well, it'd be weird, certainly. Maybe I should just have a baby come in and just suckle from my teats during the show.
Oh God. No.
If I were, I'll keep that in the file for when I become a zany morning DJ somewhere
yes.
again.
Okay. All right. Let's do science.
Okay. Yeah, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, September 13th, 2011. It's time for your science on the, Science on the March. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609 or Squires Electric. .com. You can also go to facebook.com/Squires Electric if that's your thing. While you're there, click the like button if you would. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, or if you've got some sort of electro boob that maybe is on the fritz, they can take care of that too. You find them at facebook.com/Squires Electric. Installation, upgrade, repair, or making sure you pass your next inspection. They'll take care of it. They'll also make sure that you get an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost you. They are based here in Portland. They're good people, and they're proud sponsors of this. Science on the March, part of Legion of the New, Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm on the Emerson News Network. They are Squires Electric. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, speaking of babies, they can learn before their first birthdays to deploy their attention more effectively. After brief training on tasks such as learning to look at an animated butterfly on a computer screen in order to make the winged creature fly, 11-month-olds displayed large improvements on related attention skills, such as tracking objects of interest in a cluttered scene and visually homing in on novel items. This was studied by psychology graduate student Sam Wass of the University of London. Infants' brains may respond readily to attention training, the scientists conclude. If so, such training could benefit early learning.
What about Ted Wass, though? What does Ted Wass have to say?
I miss Ted Wass.
Where is he?
I don't know.
Okay.
He was a director. He was directing television for a number of years. Perhaps he is still directing.
Is that true, or is that just a thing he put on his IMDb listing?
No, that's true. I used to see his name pop up as a director of situation comedies and such.
All right, then. Yeah.
Most criminals know to avoid leaving fingerprints at the crime scene, but soon footprints may also be a concern. Rather than signature ridges, the sole of the foot has an identifiable pressure signature that can be used to identify an individual with 99% accuracy, according to an analysis of 104 individuals. The new work examined only barefoot walkers. How shoes and different gaits might alter patterns isn't clear, but the data are now easy to analyze, according to an international team reporting in the Journal of the Royal Society Interface. And foot pressure devices are easy to install, so there may be a future role for the identification technique in the security realm.
Excellent.
I thought we already knew that, though, because don't they footprint babies? Because
yes.
Their fingers are too small, and so it serves as kind of like a fingerprint.
Right. Yeah, no, and my birth certificate has my footprints on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pollution, global warming, and overpopulation are a drag, Rick Emerson, according to the story. So what if we could just start all over on a new super Earth?
Something we could ruin from scratch.
If you can travel 36 light years, nearly roughly 212 trillion miles, to a new planet discovered by astronomers, you might be in luck. The planet, referred to as HD 85512b, is about 3.5 times the mass of Earth and may be close enough to its primary star to contain water. It's one of 50 new planets that astronomers in Chile announced yesterday that they have discovered, according to the Washington Post. Scientists are cautioning there still are many questions that need to be answered before determining whether the planet is habitable. For starters, it is unclear if HD 85512b is a rocky-like Earth or made up of gases or plasma like other planets.
I think it'd be great if we just packed everybody up, you know, to leave Earth. You know, like the Boston album cover, we all piled into ships. And then we got there, it was just a gassy planet. We just went right through it into the sun.
No.
Damn it, it was right through into a star.
It also lies at the edge of a habitable zone of its star, a smaller, cooler version of our sun, which means surface temperatures could feel like standing next to a bonfire, according to one astronomer. With the high temperatures, there must be sufficient cloud cover to keep any water on the surface from boiling.
Well, we're good at making cloud cover.
Yeah, that is our specialty, yeah. Really. The new planets were detected by measuring radial velocity, or how fast a star wobbles, depending on the gravitational pull from nearby planets. The astronomers were then able to estimate the mass of each planet based on the amount of force exerted on the stars, which revealed that 16 planets, including the new super Earth, have large enough masses to suggest they are made of rock.
So this is like after I just trashed an apartment that I lived in when I was 19 and I just fled in the middle of the night and went to live somewhere else.
Yes.
Left a note behind. Sorry! You know, and just...
It's exactly like that.
All right. Just find a new place that has pristine white walls so we can just get our destruction on.
The thing is, though, Rick, you should be allowed the choice of whether to go to the new super Earth or to stay here on the one we have poisoned and destroyed.
That's true.
Because it's really all about freedom of choice.
Well, you know, if everybody else leaves, I might actually, you know, I mean, I would go outside occasionally if everyone else was gone.
Men experience a drop in testosterone after the birth of their children, a phenomenon that may help them meet the challenges of caring for their offspring, according to a study.
Also helps them wear those emasculating, like, baby pack things around their, you know, where they've got it, like, you know, where they've got it like a papoose just strapped to their thorax.
It also explains why they readily buy minivans.
Yes.
Yes. Testosterone is a hormone that fuels male sexuality, aggression, and physical robustness, and is typically highest in young single men with no children, according to the research in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. With less testosterone coursing through their veins, men are more likely to adopt fatherly roles and help nurture their children, a particular need among humans who have much longer dependent childhoods than other mammals. Co-author Christopher Kuzawa said, "Raising human offspring is such an effort that it is cooperative by necessity, and our study shows that human fathers are biologically wired to help with the job." The research was based on 624 men aged 21 to 26 in the Philippines who were tracked for nearly 5 years, a period in which some of them entered stable relationships and became new fathers. Of those who started the study single and became fathers by the end of it, the men with the highest initial testosterone levels were more likely to have become dads. The distinction was important because previous studies had not been able to establish whether a testosterone dip observed in newly married men was a trait that made men more likely to marry, or if it resulted from the act of partnering. In other words, perhaps they thought maybe just getting married makes you less of a man.
It doesn't. Well, that's certainly true. But it doesn't. I would say that it doesn't make you more likely to marry because there's no. I mean, very, very few women go, "Ooh, where's that guy that has? Where's that guy that has absolutely no spine or assertiveness? Let me marry him and have him be the father of my children." That's the thing that happens afterward. That's the thing that happens after the marriage takes
yes.
place. So is this like a pussification,
right?
Sort of gene or just an effect? It's
an effect. Yeah, it's like it's sort of like how women, I guess, have all kinds of hormonal changes that go on. When even when they adopt babies, when they are near and nurturing babies, apparently the same thing happens to men.
Yeah, it's weird though because like you can I understand how that would happen with chicks if you had a baby because like, but how would your it's bizarre. How would your the male brain know to just like turn that off or turn it down anyway?
I really don't know. It may have something to do with scent, with hormones
maybe.
And scent.
All right.
Because there are all kinds, like there have been studies that have shown that even with women, the nurturing things and the hormonal changes happen even when they adopt babies. That once they adopt a small child, and just the smell of the baby
makes them cut their hair,
will make them bond with it, and they cut their hair.
Yes.
And again, drive a minivan, and start wearing Crocs.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is your Science on the March.
The warming of the world's oceans can cause serious illness and may cost millions of dollars in healthcare charges. This was the alarm sounded in a paper released today on the eve of a two-day conference in Brussels. The 200-page paper is a synthesis of the findings of more than 100 projects funded by the European Union since 1998. It was produced by Project Clamer, C-L-A-M-E-R. A collaboration of 17 European marine institutions. The paper says the rising temperature of the ocean water is causing a proliferation of the Vibrio genus of bacteria, which can cause food poisoning, serious gastroenteritis, septicemia, and cholera. The paper says millions of euros in health costs may result from human consumption of contaminated seafood, ingestion of waterborne pathogens, and to a lesser degree through direct occupational or recreational exposure to marine disease. Climatic conditions are playing an increasingly important role in the transmission of these diseases. The paper also describes a host of other effects of ocean warming, both documented and forecast, including melting ice, rising sea levels, coastal erosion, increased storm intensity and frequency, along with chemical changes in the sea itself, including acidification and deoxygenation.
Yeah, but you can go swimming, really without having that awkward period of, like, you know, where you have to, like, you know, douse your junk in the cold water. You can just go right in.
No, now you're just going to have to go straight into one of those, like, radiation showers.
Yes.
Like in Silkwood.
Where they do hose you off afterward.
That's all the science.
All right, there's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. By the way, just this has nothing to do with anything except to say that, speaking of warm ocean waters, I was reading this thing the other day about the Cuba Missile Crisis and about some of the Russian submarines that were sent, the Soviet subs that were sent they were there to be the equal number to the American ships that were running the blockade. So there's the American ships that are sort of encircling Cuba, and so the Soviets sent some submarines out there, like, in case there was going to be a rumble of some kind. And, of course, because of the Soviet Union, everything there was just basically just held together with just, like, dreams and Kleenex. They had these submarines that were totally ill-prepared for any of the water there because it was way too salty and it was way too warm. And so then, you know, everything just started to go to hell. There was also a typhoon at one point. So the submarines just started coming apart under the water, and they're having to, like, tape things together and whatever. But the most horrifying fact I read about this was that because of all of this, because of the typhoon and because of the fact that the saline was actually clogging up all of their air recycling systems and their reintake systems, the subs kept having to surface in the middle of the storm. And the storm, I'm leading to something here that's going to make everybody cringe, so just wait for that. The storm was actually of such ferocity that it would slam the air intake valves closed on the submarine with such force that it would create a vacuum inside the sub so powerful that it pulled the fillings out of the teeth of the sailors.
Oh, God.
There you go.
That is a horrible story.
I know, totally worth the build-up, though.
Oh, my God, that's a terrible story.
There you go.
I am never going on a submarine, by the way.
All right, just FYI. Well, just don't be Russian. Most things.
I got scared when I was on the one at Disneyland. Yeah. It was just way too claustrophobic. There's no way I could go on a real submarine.
No, it was...
Plus, I saw that... never mind. I was going to talk about a horror movie, but it doesn't matter.
With the...
The thing and the place and the stuff and the hoo-ha. Okay.
Was Lou Gossett Jr. there?
No.
Okay.
No, a Beaverton man was arrested last Friday on accusations of sex abuse dating back to the 1990s involving a Columbia County woman who is now 22. William Mayo Dunlop, 68, was arrested at his home in the 17,000 block of Pike Street. He was accused of sex abuse and first-degree sodomy. He is being held on $250,000 bail. The victim said Dunlop reportedly abused her from the late 1990s to the early 2000s. Dunlop had worked as a clown and a bus driver since the 1970s, police said. In that time, his clown business was in St. Helens, also in the St. John's neighborhood of Portland and in the Beaverton area. Oregon State Police are investigating whether there are additional victims related to the time and proximity of the now 22-year-old victim and separately of Dunlop working as a clown and a bus driver. Kirk Hansen, who lives next door to Dunlop, told KGW, "Whatever the case is, I hope the truth comes out and the truth will vindicate someone and condemn someone else."
Well, that is true, I guess, technically.
Way to take a stand, Kirk Hansen.
It's a zero-sum game, I suppose.
Dunlop's wife said, as she left the Washington County Courthouse, "I'm in shock."
Now, did you say that he's accused of, this is sodomy with who? Whom?
In the 90s. The woman is now 22.
Was she underage
so
then?
So she would have been underage then.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And, yeah, and he was a clown.
Okay, because I didn't think the sodomizing was actually illegal, but I suppose that's if they're saying, you know, ow, please stop.
I'm never entirely sure. Doesn't the actual definition of sodomy, legal definition of sodomy, like, change from place to place?
From state to state, I believe. I think in many states it is anything that is not traditional penetrative sex.
Okay.
I think if you're penetrating some other area, some other region on the map, or if you're using, like, a thing.
Ah, okay.
Like, because I think that's why it's, like, in the... The hell is it? I think it's in Alabama where it's, like, sex toys are still illegal. Like, you can't... Like, there's a whole... And went to the Supreme Court of the state, and, like, the Supreme Court's like, no dildos. And so now, like, you can't... you have to go over the state line to buy them or whatever because you can't sell them, so...
Because it's a dry state.
Yes. Yes, it is, Don.
Four manatees looking for love found themselves in the wrong place at the wrong time Monday afternoon. More than 30 neighbors gathered on the banks of the St. John's River in Arlington, Florida, after the manatees were found stranded in a shallow water dish. During high tide, manatees are often found grazing the area, according to residents, but Monday they were caught off guard. A woman with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission said, usually they can get themselves out on their own, but sometimes they just need more assistance. Fish and Wildlife officials directed neighbors who loaded the 1,200-pound mammals onto extra-large stretchers and drug them into deeper waters one by one. Normally, boat propellers push manatees closer to the coastline, but on Monday there was another reason. Kendall Williams, who first found the manatees and kept them calm and alive by spraying them with water from his backyard sprinkler, said, there was a female, then a male, then a female, then a male. He noticed something odd about the manatee's behavior, explaining that he thinks explains the reason they ended up in the ditch. The males were chasing the females, and the females come up a little ditch here trying to get away from the males. They say it's common that the females will beach themselves to get away from the males.
So rather than have contact with male manatees, they would just throw themselves onto a dry, rocky beach where they will die a slow and agonizing death.
Apparently, even female manatees do not find male manatees attractive.
No.
Get away from me, sea cow!
Don't
call me a sea cow.
I was going to try to tie that into like an Axe body spray joke or something, but it didn't really work. Yours is better, though.
At least they were spotted in time, said Williams, and the five-hour effort to save them ended with happy results for all. Williams said, the river is part of my neighborhood, and it's part of my life. So I'm walking away having learned more about our ecology and everything going on out here.
The thing about manatees is, you know, they seem... You know, they're sort of cute and all, but they just seem very dim. They don't seem terribly bright. And we sort of have an affection for something that is... Like, if you're just cute or you're just dumb, that'll only get you so far. If you're cute and dumb, that'll take you as far as you need to go. There will always be someone there who is willing to help you.
That's why we so loved Chris Farley.
Exactly.
Yes. With Texas Governor Rick Perry threatening to cement his standing atop the national polls, his rivals for the Republican presidential nomination aggressively sought to undermine his conservative credentials during Monday night's debate.
Are we back at the beginning of the show?
There's so much about this. It's important. It's our nation.
Right.
It's our freedom.
Are we just acknowledging that the people who listen to the Rick Emerson Show don't care?
Yeah.
So we're just going to use all that up here?
No, I think I've got one put aside for later, too.
Okay.
No, I have all the job stuff for later. I'm going to depress everyone on the Emerson Show with unemployment.
Awesome.
RedState.com editor-in-chief Eric Erickson says this debate showed it's still anyone's game.
I think this may be the first debate where Mitt Romney didn't come out the clear winner. Rick Perry came in strong, and really, I think everyone held themselves till the end.
Because he's the only one who came out anti-cancer.
Everyone held themselves till the end.
Held themselves. Well, Ron Paul did. But,
don't vaccinate my junk!
Political analyst Paul Begala says Perry and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney are starting to truly separate themselves as alternatives from their party.
Mitt was cool. Rick was hot. Mitt was factual. And Rick was a little more emotional.
That's just stupid.
Mitt was cool. Rick was hot. It's like...
A McDLT.
Coming this fall.
It's like some terrible political buddy cop drama.
Oh.
But one of them should just become a Whig. You know?
Yeah.
Or like a
wobbly.
A know-nothing.
Yes. church members in Walton County, Georgia, say dozens of people got violently ill at a Sunday potluck service. 5 o'clock, everybody started dropping like flies, said Edwin Smith. Smith and his wife are both sick and said the digestive disruption was excruciating. Last night was the most awful pain I ever had in my life. I thought I would die.
Digestive disruption.
Yes.
That means nothing's happening.
That means the pain and the pooping.
No, there's no pooping, though, if you're disrupting the digestion.
It could have meant erupt. Well, they were trying to be alliterative, whoever wrote this.
And, okay.
The Solid Rock Ministries members met at a room in Criswell Park in Monroe. When people started to get sick, volunteers drove them to the hospital. Smith said someone loaded him into the back of a truck. David Peel was there, but he did not get sick. However, he did say, there was people outside puking, and there was people inside puking. I mean, they were everywhere.
What was the event that was happening?
It was at some kind of a church potluck. And usually food, most actual food poisoning generally takes at least 24 hours to hit.
Right.
But for some reason, It was like they all got sick, I guess, while they were still there. Walton Regional Medical Center in Monroe said they treated 24 people and admitted 7. They have sent cultures and samples to the state lab. Several people at the service think the actual number of people sick and could be closer to 40 because not everybody went to the emergency room. Several family members called to say the hospital seemed overwhelmed by all the sick people.
And where did this happen? What was the park?
It was Criswell Park in Monroe, Georgia.
We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal.
I swear to God, I just here's how brilliant that is right now. I swear to you, I just opened up an Ed Wood sound file in an audio editing program, and without being able to hear it, I just randomly picked a spot in it, and it was Criswell.
You're good.
Right there.
Wow.
Excellent.
A Seventh Party suspect spoiled potato salad, but Michael Jones and his relatives thought it might have been something else. Jones said, "Everybody we've talked to has either had the ice or the water. I want them to go over to Criswell and actually test the water and see if it might be something in the water." Smith told Stouffer he ate a little bit of everything people brought to the dinner. He said he's sad the church service ended in a hurry, noting, "Satan, he steps in any way he can to destroy."
Usually through potato salad. That's it's a little known fact about the Dark Lord, is that he will find you via mayonnaise and eggs.
Yeah, that is his doorway.
Satan is the man. He's inside every aluminum bowl sitting in the sun.
Sun-ripened potato salad. Let's do our entertainment news.
You know, the best potato salad, well, I mean, not the best potato salad. Of course, the best potato salad is obviously that made by my mom. But I got to tell you, you know, some potato salad I had one time? It was the recipe, it was James Carville's recipe. I have James Carville's potato salad recipe, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. My mother-in-law recently, because she decided to bring Patrick some pre-made food, so he has some stuff in the freezer, and it was delightful. And she also had made some barbecue, and when she showed up, she had barbecue and she'd made potato salad. And it was so adorable and so sweet because she opened this plastic container and she had actually taken the kind to, like, slice the hard-boiled eggs and lay them out on top of the potato salad. And she was just bringing it to my house.
Yeah.
But she did the whole presentation thing. You know, it was very nice.
Potato salad is a thing. It's easy to ruin, and a lot of people ruin it because they think it's got to be done. Because they think that if they do it too simply that it's not going to be good, when, of course, it's simplicity that makes good potato salad what it is.
Yeah, my mother made horrible potato salad. Horrible. She was one of those people. She would put so much French's mustard in it, it would turn it bright yellow.
Now, that's the three biggest mistakes are people overcook. They overcook the potatoes or the eggs. They put too many condiments in there. As Carville says in the recipe, in a little handwritten note at the bottom, he says, "And always don't overtouch your salad," which is true.
I mean, and he should know.
It really is, yeah. Every conceivable sphere of your life, that's accurate advice.
Do not overtoss yours.
All right.
Okay. Entertainment.
Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday, September 13th.
Authorities in suburban Atlanta say rapper Gucci Mane will serve 6 months in jail after pleading guilty to battery and other charges. DeKalb County Solicitor General Sherry Boston said Tuesday that Mane, whose real name is Radrick Delantic Davis, pleaded guilty to 2 counts of battery, 2 counts of reckless conduct, and 1 count of disorderly conduct. A police report said Davis pushed 36-year-old Diana Graham out of his Hummer as it rolled down a suburban Atlanta street on January 28th. State Court Judge Eleanor Ross sentenced the rapper to serve 6 months in custody, followed by several months on probation.
There should totally be, I remember there was this, was it on HBO? Was that where Snoop Dogg had that weird sketch comedy show that he did for a while?
I don't know.
I don't think it was on the Chris Rock show. I think it was on his own television show that maybe was on MTV2.
I think it was one of the MTV.
It was
things.
Snoop. It was called, like, I swear to God, it was like Snoop Dogg's Televizzle or something.
Oh God, you're right.
But it was a sketch about I don't know. It was a sketch about something or other. I have no idea what I'm doing. Oh, it was for Haterade. That's right. So it was if you've been hating on players all day, needed to rejuvenate, you would have Haterade. There ought to be a sort of like one of those like little clenchy like workout things that Charles Atlas used to, so like you can, like, you know, to strengthen your pimp hand. You know, just to sort of one of those, you know, those things that it looks like.
Yeah. Like, it looks like a nutcracker.
Yeah, it's like a pair of scissors, but there's no blades, yeah. And you're sort of going, kick-go, just, you know, to keep one's pimp hand, you know, strong, and also really your dexterity.
Or you could also make the pimp hand stress ball.
Right. And so, like, and then that keeps every pimp finger individually strong.
Yes. Right. Good. Brooke Hogan, the Hulk's 23-year-old daughter, says she agrees to pose nude in a cage in Miami to show the plight of animals.
Hot.
I have dropped the photo in the Dropbox there for you.
Yeah, excellent.
Hogan took the famous... Brooke Hogan took her dad to the opening of the nude photo exhibit in Miami as part of his 58th birthday celebration, where she appeared naked in the cage in the photo. I've always had a love for animals, and I've seen abuse firsthand. It ignited my passion for saving them even more, said Hogan, who has a Pomeranian. The worst part is they are voiceless in our world. Hogan's portrait is part of a series by photographer Jordan Michael Zuniga. Women in Cages features prominent Miami women photographed in cages, with 80% of the exhibition's proceeds going to PETA.
I love the idea that there's actually just an exhibit called Women in Cages.
Women in Cages.
You used to have to try to cover that up by calling it something else and putting it on a Scorpions album cover.
Brooke said, I've always had a love for animals, and I've done it. Yeah, so television viewers watched the Hogans grow as a family, ultimately splitting up after her father allegedly had an affair. Brooke Hogan says she's moved on with her life since the family's television show ended. She had her own reality show, Brooke Knows Best, which was taped in Miami. She says that she thinks she turned out a good person with positive morals.
You can see that, by the way, at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for September 13th. 2011, unless you were a John and Gresham. You can see that. That is Brooke Hogan. And let me see if I can actually get an eye full of that myself there. Well, that's an interesting photo. She has like some sort of Natasha Henstridge thing.
Yeah, kind going of. On yeah. Here. Well, right. she is a succubus.
She doesn't
and
really
an alien.
Even look real here. She looks like just some like weird. She looks like some cross between like an H.R. Giger drawing and like a Vargas girl.
Yeah, well, it's heavily digitally altered to for effect. So,
all right. Okay, et cetera, Don Taylor.
Right. Serena Williams is telling her friends that she's sorry about her outburst during the women's final at the U.S. Open yesterday when she berated a referee for penalizing her at a crucial point in the match. Sources say the tennis star feels like she got lost in the heat of the moment and simply believes her emotions got the better of her. She was fined $2,000 for the outburst, but says she is less concerned about the money than she is about getting her game back on track. Amy Winehouse's father claims her ex-husband laid the groundwork for the singer's ultimate demise, insisting it was Blake Fielder-Civil. Is that his name?
Fielder-Civil.
Who first introduced her to hard drugs like heroin. Mitch Winehouse doesn't blame Amy's death on Blake, who's currently serving time for burglary and firearm offense. But in an interview with Anderson Cooper, Mitch was pretty adamant that if it wasn't for Blake, Amy's life would not have spiraled out of control the way it did.
I see. So he's not blaming him.
Right. But if she hadn't been with him, it wouldn't affect. Former World Series MVP Manny Ramirez was arrested for allegedly committing domestic violence. Witnesses said Ramirez was taken out of his Weston, Florida home at around 7 p.m. This was like 2 days ago, I think. Monday? Maybe it was yesterday. Ramirez's wife was in the house. Two witnesses said that Ramirez and his wife were involved in an altercation. He was released from a Florida jail this morning after posting $2,500 bond. He was swarmed by reporters on the way out, but the baseball star did not answer any questions, speaking half in English and half in Spanish, saying, "It's none of your business." The reporters on the scene were extremely aggressive, and before Manny took off, several shoved their microphones in his car window until Manny Ramirez grabbed one of them and threw it out the window of his car.
Excellent.
Yeah, good for him, I guess. I mean, not for the domestic violence part. But
no,
for the
but the grabbing and the throwing. Yeah.
Ryan O'Neal said he backed out of Dancing with the Stars because of a bad knee, but multiple sources have told TMZ that he really backed out because he can't stand Nancy Grace. Sources told TMZ that O'Neal feels Grace has been disrespectful to his family, claiming she has gone after Redmond, who had an ongoing drug problem, and even suggested the reason Redmond is messed up is because Ryan is a bad parent. Apparently, sources are saying that O'Neal really wanted to do Dancing with the Stars, but simply could not coexist with Nancy Grace.
He should have just said that. I think that would have that would have increased his stock with most people.
I think so, too.
If he just said that she was a huge C and he didn't want to be anywhere near her.
People would go, I get that, man.
I
totally agree. I wouldn't want to be in the same room with her either.
I don't know anybody who would disagree with that statement.
The family of Roald Dahl He's trying to raise the funds to preserve a hut in which the late writer wrote tales of big friendly giants, fantastic foxes, and magical chocolate factories. The family hopes to raise $790,000 to stop the 50-year-old brick and polystyrene shed that was preserved as it was when Dahl died in 1990 from falling apart.
Now, I thought it was preserved. I thought you could tour it.
I think you can. You can. You can go visit and you can see the exterior of his house, but you can't of the hit, but you can't go inside. And apparently it's starting to fall apart.
Okay.
So they're looking for money to actually preserve it more fully. Dahl called the shed where he worked daily my little nest. Its contents include his chair, writing board, and notepads.
Right.
Along with an eclectic array of objects, including the writer's own hip bone.
Excellent. Hey, a man after your own heart.
I know. Good for you, Roald Dahl. I like that that's...
That's the thing that wins you over.
Apparently
right
that's... Associated Press finds that notable to mention. Yeah. So now I know when I die that will be part of the stories. But and she also saved her own hip bone after hip replacement surgery. And people say she was wacky. She was eccentric.
Because when I went to England, I wanted to see that, but I wasn't able to because that's where it is, right? It's in
northwest of London. And it's in Great Missenden.
Yeah, and so I guess you can look through and you can sort of see the writing room and you can see the chair, which has still got like the upholstery sort of worn out where his elbows would rest while he was typing and everything. But yeah, it is in just this really sort of run down area from what I've been able to see. So
his granddaughter, model and writer Sophie Dahl, wants to share the place with visitors. But some people have balked at spending so much money on a shed and suggested royalties from Dahl's own books could cover the cost. Writer Misha Glennie was one of many to gently poke fun at the campaign on Tuesday. He tweeted, Stella McCartney to appeal to taxpayers for money to restring her father's Hofner bass guitar.
I suppose one could also make the point that, I don't know, maybe if a government just shaved like 0.01% out of one of their defense budgets, they could actually preserve something that has artistic and historical value. But I mean, you know.
Amelia Foster, director of the Roald Dahl Museum, said the Dahl family had made a very significant financial contribution to the project and stressed that the campaign would seek funds from charitable trusts rather than members of the public. The hut is part of our national heritage, and we also hope that individual philanthropists will want to play part in securing its future
also,
for everyone to enjoy.
By the way, you think they'd show a little goddamn gratitude since Roald Dahl was a spy during World War
II. Too.
And he actually... Was it here where we did that story?
No.
So he was a spy during World War II. And
I
you
have
know,
read that, yeah.
And he was, and not only was he a spy, I swear to God this is true, Roald Dahl was a spy, and he was also, like, he was... But his whole thing was he was a seduction spy. His whole deal was he was a Lothario.
So he was a male Mata Hari.
That's exactly what he was. And there were high-profile, high-target women who they believed had information or that they needed an in with. And he'd get that in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so you'd think maybe a little thanks, a little something.
And by the way, today would have been his 95th birthday.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I dig that. You know what I was just reading the other day, and somebody has noted this, and it is true. Sophie Dahl, who is his granddaughter and also an accomplished author, she's a looker.
Yeah, no, she is a lovely, lovely woman. She's a beautiful woman.
Quite something.
So good for Roald Dahl. Well, apparently, you know, Roald Dahl, I'm guessing what with him being a seduction spy, he was able to get with good-looking women.
Yes.
So, of course, you know, his genes would be good. The mom's genes would be good.
The Mirror just maybe a year and a half ago, they published, because there was originally in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, there was a sixth child who went through. Because as it stands, there was just Augustus, Veruca, Violet, Mike TV, and Charlie Bucket. But there was originally a girl named Miranda Pike. And so they ran about a year ago this excerpt showing... Not doing any of the build-up, but basically just showing the chapter where she and her parents are dispatched, which is awesome, by the way. She's ground into a fine powder at the end, and then the Oompa Loompas sing a fantastic song about it. If I'm feeling especially charitable, maybe I'll read it next hour.
Oh, that'd be nice.
With accompanying music.
Okay, we could do that.
And a little tune that I've made up to go with the Oompa Loompa chant.
Nice.
Of course, people who aren't subscribers won't be able to hear,
no,
but I suppose that's a thing that you'll have to face in the cold, hard, light of day.
But if you did subscribe, even if you can't hear it today, you could get it from the archives.
That's
and
right.
To it later.
Exactly. We got 15 seconds.
I got nothing. Right. I'm done. There's nothing I can tell the people in only 15 seconds.
Okay. And so I will just say, as we end this, balls. And With that, we bring down the curtain on another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, who I think is sitting in the kitchen. Executive producer Bruce Agle, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. Don't forget, we'll see you again tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. And you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at Cascadia.fm. You can also take it with you on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show is next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Have a safe and satisfying Tuesday, won't you?